welcome to Room Escape Divas, a podcast on all things room escapes. This is our 12th episode, and today we have Dan Egner as our guest.
You may feel apprehension, and thus let my words be your guide. If this is your first, pay attention, so you know what to do when inside. You must first remove your possessions. No phones are allowed once in there. No running or acts of aggression. And don't stand on tables or chairs. So prepare, for you'll find there's not much time. Keys and codes you won't have to reuse. Now come a bit nearer, I'll make this more clearer.
I don't get that feature.
Look, here's the procedure. The room is recorded, but you'll be rewarded when at last you've deciphered all clues. And then we will see how you fared. Be prepared.
Hi, I don't even know if I pronounced your name correctly, Dan.
Oh, you got it right.
Huzzah! Yes! I was really scared. I pronounced Christine's name wrong. Ah. And now I've forgotten which one was the right pronunciation, so I'm not going to attempt it.
Wait, how else do you pronounce Christine?
Her last name, not the first one. Yes. Notice I didn't say her last name in case I was wrong. The cool thing about Dan is he is one of the first people in North America that had a room escape directory. And you also keep track of all sorts of other things on that directory. So it's not only room escapes, you also have puzzle hunts as well.
I have a puzzle hunt calendar.
And what else do you have on there?
Mostly room escapes and puzzle hunts.
All right. So we covered them all. So that's great. Because you've been part of the puzzle hunt community for a very long time.
Yes. Or various puzzle hunt communities.
How long have you been part of it?
Well, I've been doing hunts since, I think, 1998 was when I started being involved in playing in the Microsoft game. Which was their like 24 or 36 hour van game tradition. And so they had that yearly. And so I started then and then sort of moved on to various other things.
Well,
the Microsoft game was closed is one of its negative aspects. It was this funny invite system, you know, where they had like a list of people that had played the previous year and they sort of sent it to that list. And then sometimes a team would bud into two teams and it was all very sort of weird and organic and you kind of had to be invited. And some coworkers, you know, thought I would be interested correctly and invited me to play. That was a long time ago. Current puzzle hunts are all very open to the public. For example, the team I'm part of just finished running a hunt called Bang 35, which was totally open to the public as long as you were in the area.
Cool. Could you tell us more about Bang 35? Because I'm pretty sure it's part of a whole series of bangs that started with one, possibly.
Yeah, it's a little complicated, but yes. Bang stands for Bay Area Night Game. The Bay in this question is the San Francisco Bay. The night is a lie. I think the first few were at night, but the acronym stuck. You know, this one ran from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., so not really a night game. Though Bang 28, we were happy to run at night. Anyway, so this is just a local enthusiast-driven thing. The numbers are just kind of taken by people as they come. And then all this stuff happens. Like I said, it's sort of complicated. Like Bang 35, it's not really the 35th, because there were a bunch of numbers where somebody said, I'm going to run Bang 20 or I'm going to run Bang 30. But then they never actually got around to running it. But then like the number was already taken. And so somebody ran 31 and, you know, somebody made a joke about the number and had one that had a different number in it. So anyway, it's complicated, but it's about the 30 something ish bang in the area.
Have you been involved with all the bangs since number one?
No, I got started probably around 10 or 11 or something like that. Maybe Bang. I know I played Bang 12. And our team, the Burninators.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember that team name?
I do. It just like went off in my head. I'm like, oh, it's the Burninators.
If any of you happen to be old people, you may remember an old Flash comic on the internet called Homestar Runner.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Had Strong Bad and all those people. So Trogdor the Burninator was a notable comic in that series.
Yep.
That was all very fresh and, you know, funny at the time. And so we were the Burninators. Anyway, so we eventually started just somehow running every seventh of these. I think because we ran the 7th and the 14th and then decided to make it a tradition. Anyway, so we and I shouldn't say we for number 7 because I wasn't part of them at the time. They ran 7. We all ran 14 and 21 and 28 and now 35. And we all had it. We had a sort of separate theme for each one. And so for Bang 35, the theme was hexaminos, which are little – like if a domino has 2 squares or a Tetris piece has 4 squares, a hexamino has 6 squares. There happened to be 35 of them. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came from. A somewhat nerdy theme by comparison to certain others. Like 14, we did presidents, and it was on President's Day, U.S. presidents, I should say. 21 was just about different interpretations of the number 21. So anyway, so Bang 35, at the start of the hunt, you got a bag of all the hexaminos, little plastic hexaminos. And then every puzzle used them in some way, and we tried to have as many different ways you could use these little plastic pieces as possible.
And how many people played, or how many teams, and how many people on teams? And
so we had 2 runnings, 2 weeks apart. So the one that was just yesterday was the 2nd. Each time we had about 40 teams. So I think we had 40 teams. So the first time, I think we had 43, and this time I think we had 39.
Nice.
And teams, the guidance we gave was like 3 to 6 people,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And I, you know, 4 and 5 were the very common team sizes. Relatively lightweight, casual puzzle hunt, only a few hours. Puzzles were fairly accessible. Maybe a little more challenging than what you'd find in an escape room, but only somewhat.
Would you say about the same kind of challenge as Puzzle Pint, or more or less?
Yeah, pretty similar to Puzzle Pint. Maybe slightly more than Puzzle Pint, slightly more involved. I mean, if you think about it, Puzzle Pint, what, you'd think it takes an average team couple hours to solve those puzzles,
yeah,
something like that. So, and there's on any given Puzzle Pint month, there's what, 5 or 6 puzzles, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, in our hunt, we had 7 puzzles, and it ran from 10 to 6. So, you know, a little meatier on a per puzzle basis. On the other hand, that time includes travel time, you know, walking around. But it was all in like a downtown, so it would take you like 5-10 minutes to go from one to the next, and then maybe you'd stop for lunch, and so take a half hour out of that. But that gives you a sense.
So when you have people moving around, do you usually talk to local businesses to hold puzzles, or how does that work?
That's an interesting question. It varies a lot. So for this one, we started in a park, and we actually got a permit from the city for the park.
Nice.
Opinions vary on whether you should actually bother doing that, but we did. In subsequent locations, we're mostly, again, there was one other was a park. One was basically a train station that happened to have a big, nice open area. And we actually talked to the city about using that. Some were just sort of a place where there are a lot of it. Like one was kind of this courtyard in front of, and there was like a Starbucks and some other stuff. And so, you know, and there were some tables and people could flop. And then at the end location was a business that we had talked to. So, you know, mostly just kind of opportunistic street corners.
Uh-huh.
And with 40 teams, especially after the start, you can kind of get away with that.
Yeah.
Like you're a little bit of a spectacle. And, mm-hmm. you know, the muggles are wandering around being like, what are all these like people doing lying on the sidewalk scribbling on paper? But but it's not like, you know, we're not like blocking traffic, right? Mm-hmm. If you had maybe twice as many, it would be hard.
Yeah.
And you would definitely need to like start booking venues or something.
So if they were at a location, however, would there be something they'd find at that location, or how does that work?
So we staffed all our locations. So for puzzle hunts, it varies. Like the classic way back in the day puzzle hunt, you would go to a location and there would be some, maybe you'd have to search a little bit and there'd be some like cleverly hidden thing with, you know, your puzzles in it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit out of fashion these days, I guess, for various reasons. So what you would find is one of us or a volunteer wearing a particular T-shirt that said 35 on it in big hexamino numbers. And they would welcome you. We used a thing called Clue Keeper, which is an app that you run on your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
For its Android and iOS. And so in Clue Keeper, it knows, you know, which clues you've gotten to, which ones you've solved. It does the hints and all that. So you go to the site. Clue Keeper actually tells you, confirms your answer, tells you the next site to go to. So it says, okay, go to the corner of, you know, such and such and such and such, and where to find your staffer or whatever. And then you meet the staffer. They tell you a start code. You punch the start code into Clue Keeper. Clue Keeper shows this like special green screen. They show that to the staffer. The staffer hands them a puzzle, and then they have the puzzle. And then they go solve the puzzle. Clue Keeper knows they've started it, so it'll deliver hints at some schedule. You can put in partials into Clue Keeper, which may give like sort of help. Once you get the answer, you can put that into Clue Keeper, and it makes a happy little sound, confirms your answer, and tells you the next place to go.
Oh, nice.
And meanwhile, it's keeping track of the timings and everything else.
So is there, I would assume that with all of this, there is a budget with Bang, and do that, is there a fee to play, or how does that work?
Yeah, we charged, if I remember right, I think it was $30 a team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, teams being about four people, so much of that went to the little hexagonal pieces. Mm-hmm. Not all of it. Some of that went to, we got insurance too. So,
oh, yeah.
That sort of administrative thing.
Yeah. Oh.
We definitely don't make much money off it.
Oh, no, I don't think you do. Because that's, yeah. No, don't worry. I wasn't worried about it. I was just thinking how to pay for all the incidentals that you have. Like Clue Keeper, for example, if I understand correctly, that itself is a paid app as well.
It is free for public community events.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
Or rather, it is pay what you feel like.
Ah, okay.
For their main business model is to support sort of more corporate team building-y hunts and related activities. And so for that, they charge.
Hmm. Oh, okay. But if it's just a fun public thing?
For the business that the end, they were willing to host us on the theory that teams would probably buy some food or something like that.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, it's all very low-key and community is the idea.
Oh, that's really cool.
Sounds like fun.
So you have a large puzzle community there. I have no idea how large the puzzle community is in Toronto. Do you know, Mike?
No. I mean, like, we went to Puzzle Pines and there'd be a couple tables, but
it was growing as time went on, I think. I haven't been to Puzzle Pine in a long time, but
yeah.
Was it growing or was it shrinking?
No, they were.
Or was it stable?
From the first one, I heard that they were at the verge of potentially splitting up into their another venue to have simultaneous Puzzle Pine events, but I don't think it's as big as where Dan is.
No.
Oh, no, they've got a whole... what do you think the crossover is between puzzle enthusiasts and escape room enthusiasts? Because I know puzzle hunts, in comparison to escape rooms, they're far more difficult.
Yes. Well, they're different. Maybe they're longer.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some escape rooms that are pretty darn difficult. And the puzzles are a little sort of difficult in style. Like, if there's an escape room that's super, super hard, it's probably not very good.
Yes.
Or at least, I've never played an escape room where at the end I said, wow, that was really tough, but it was fair and fun. And
No. We agree with you. Actually, I think we mentioned this in one of the podcasts before. It was probably the last one. Where we thought the puzzle was hard and tough and we enjoyed it, we realized it's just too hard for the public.
I mean, and part of that's from a business perspective.
Yeah.
But even from an enthusiast perspective, I've never met one where and I guess you have, but I've never met one where I said, wow, that was hard and tough and I'm glad it was hard and tough. It was more like that was hard and tough. And the reason it was hard and tough is because this one step was kind of arbitrary. And, you know, you didn't know, like, oh, you were supposed to rotate each symbol 90 degrees, and you just had to kind of guess that, and so forth and so on.
No, for the most part, anything that's hard and tough in escape room is because they designed it badly.
Now, part of that's, like, how much hard and tough can you have in an hour?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a puzzle hunt, if even a small puzzle hunt is 6 or 7 hours, and a large one is, like, you know, several days, then you can really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's huge crossover. I mean, the puzzle community is all super, super excited about escape rooms, and everybody talks about that. And for example, I'm organizing a trip to LA in September.
Yes.
Where a bunch of us will, and it looks like there's probably about 10 or 12 people so far, will go and just do a lot of escape rooms in LA for several days. And these are all puzzle hunt people, so...
Do you see any difficulty for puzzle enthusiasts solving escape rooms? I know, for instance, I know that one of our tendencies is to overthink puzzles, and when you're used to puzzles that are far more difficult and far more involved, was that a bit of a transition to sort of adjust yourself for escape room puzzles?
Oh my god, we overthink things so badly. You get used to it. I mean, puzzle hunts vary, puzzles vary. If you do a lot of stuff, you realize that, you know, even escape rooms vary. Like, you know, you sort of get the idea of how a particular designer's sort of intuition works and what they expect and what's kind of fair and what's not fair. Like in some escape room venues, like you'll never reuse information or you'll never reuse an answer. Some escape rooms are really clear about that. They're like, once you have opened a lock, you will never use that puzzle again. Whereas in others, like, you reuse things all the time. Mm-hmm. Scrap is famous for that even. It's sort of the same sort of thing, but I have a little rule that I talk to. If we're stuck, it goes something like this. If we're stuck, have you tried just counting? Because it's so common that, like, oh, there's six birds, and this thing is marked with a bird. But, you know, okay, two of them are flying to the left, and three are flying to the right, and one is standing. You know, maybe it's something about the positioning between the birds, and we draw a line between the left facing birds and the right facing birds. And then somebody else will be like, how about it's just six? How about it's just the number six? And then you see that other symbol? That's, you know, cats. And okay, there's four cats. All right, six, four, you know. So yes, we so overthink. And especially when you're sort of switching gears or whatever, it's very easy to overthink an escape room puzzle.
I think for us, because we don't do very many puzzle hunts here in Toronto or Canada, for that matter, there doesn't seem to be that many, we do more escape rooms than puzzle hunts, so I don't think we overthink puzzles. So I kind of disagree with Manpans. I don't think we overthink puzzles.
Well, in the beginning
puzzles.
We started
Well, at the
to.
Beginning. I think all newbies.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem with being a newbie, is that you will think the most craziest answer to a puzzle. And as you get more experienced, you start to realize, no, it can't be that. There's no way they would come up. Unless it's a scrap game, then you have to come up with the most weirdest theory ever.
All right, if you're playing the drinking game at home, we just slam scrap again.
No, that wasn't slamming. I was just saying they'll come up with, like, you know, crazy solutions.
Scrap was my first escape room ever, so they will always hold a special place in my heart.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
One thing I learned in this hunt, which was really interesting to me, is at the end of the hunt, I was talking to a team. They called themselves Checks and Balances because three or four of them were from the Czech Republic. Oh, or maybe Czechia now, I think it's going to be. They said that puzzle hunts are huge there, which I did not know. Room escapes are apparently just getting started. And in fact, some of them had moved, you know, they were expats who had left the Czech Republic a year or two ago. And so they said, oh, since they left, it had kind of taken off, but it was this new thing. But puzzle hunts had apparently been this big, big thing in the Czech Republic for like a long time that kind of like lots of local population knew about, which I had no idea of. And there were some that were just crazy. Like she was saying, there was one that was called 88. But then it became 66, and the reason is that it was 88 hours.
Whoa.
Wow.
And I guess that was too many, so that now it's merely 66 hours. And so her response to our puzzle hunt, and a bang is a pretty lightweight puzzle hunt, so this is fair, but her response is like, wow, this seems really easy and short and, you know, so forth. And I'm like, cool, you should try the MIT mystery hunt. But, you know, so they have all these like super long, and they said a typical one would be, you know, in a city, you know, some Czech city, and usually you would be in a team and you could travel on foot or using public transit, and it would last maybe 20 hours.
Wow.
And so it would start in the morning and it would go until like early hours of the next morning or something like that. And, you know, I was like, well, would people take breaks? Like, would they take meal breaks or whatever? And she said, well, certainly some people would, but the winning team certainly didn't.
Oh.
You know, we talked about the sort of genre of puzzles. Of course, my first question was, you know, not knowing Czech, you know, is there any possibility I would play? And she was like, no. So I was like, okay. You know, I was sort of asking, you know, the genre of puzzle. And she said, well, it varies. You know, different organizing teams like sort of do it differently. But it's sort of the same general idea, which is you get this kind of, you know, as both escape rooms and puzzle hunts, which is this mystery puzzle thing, right? You get a thing and you don't necessarily even know what to do. And you kind of have to like figure that out through a series of ahas. And then maybe as related to the ahas, there's also some you have some term for it, process puzzles, something like that,
mm-hmm.
where you sort of, we call them crank turning, you know, where you'll sort of do some task, but some mixture of ahas and task-based and, you know, word puzzles and logic puzzles and that kind of thing. So I thought it was really interesting that there was this, like, puzzle hunt community out there that I'd never even heard of.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's the hard thing about a lot of puzzles, that it's language dependent.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get around that because you can hide so many things in language.
Yeah, well, everyone loves word puzzles. I mean, maybe not everyone.
I don't. Although I do cryptic crosswords now, so I'm learning to love them.
That's pretty hardcore, at least for a non-British person.
Yeah.
I think we do the easy cryptic crosswords.
We do,
though.
Yeah.
And then we'll get words. I'm like, I have no idea what this
word
is.
Yeah, some of it's British slang, and you're just like, I've never heard of this in my life.
That's what makes it hard.
Yeah. So with escapes, a lot of escape rooms are kind of veering away from puzzle-focused ones now. A lot of them are going to more experience-focused. Have you noticed, like, a trend in that? Are you disappointed in it? Because I know that you're a big puzzle guy, so...
Well, I'm also a big technology guy, so... Oh,
there you go.
I actually love the... I love both parts. I think some people in the puzzle hunt community are more sort of purist, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's this whole discussion about, you know... Well, there is the ever-raging discussion about... You know, technology versus content. And, you know, it's just like, oh, our special effects ruining movies. It used to be just about the acting and the plot. And now there's all this technology and computers makes everything terrible. Oh, I love both. And in fact, it's funny. My normal role in a puzzle hunt is to be the technology person, the gadget person. And in fact, a lot of people were surprised. Like, people would come up and see me staffing a puzzle at this last hunt and be like, oh, this must be the gadget puzzle. And I'd be like, let me reset your expectations. This is not the gadget puzzle. Here, have a piece of paper. So I love it when, you know, and I remember, like, the first time I did Ohm Escape, right? Which, at least here, was probably the first, I guess, what one would call Gen 2 room. And, you know, when you do something and, oh, my God, a door opened by itself. Whoa. This was back in the day, right?
You know,
before we all knew about, like, you know, precisely what a solenoid sounds like when it activates. And so that's just super cool. And really, ideally, it's like a mixture of all these parts. Like, I think the perfect thing is a mixture of, you know, clever insights, like something sort of puzzly where you really have to think and you have this opportunity to feel smart and clever, and some sort of sense of experience, you know, where you really sort of feel like you're in this flow, and the sort of magic that technology can bring. At least that's how I would say my perfect experience would go. So, for example, in Decathlon 10, I built this widget, which was a puzzle hunt. And it was all themed after cartoons, sort of cartoons broadly scoped. So it included, you know, animated movies as well as, like, newspaper cartoons. Anyway, we had one puzzle hunt themed after Kelvin and Hobbes, the newspaper comic strip.
Ooh, fun.
I built a Kelvin ball. And so the idea is you had this ball. We just tossed you the ball at the start and the ball started talking to you.
Oh, fun.
What?
And the ball made you play all these silly little games, sort of in the spirit of Kelvin ball.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, oh, you've entered the opposite zone. Now you'll have to do the opposite of everything I tell you to do, and so on. You know, oh, you've gotten to base 7, you know, that means such and such. And so that's kind of my typical, I mean, in reality, it was just like a phone buried in the middle of the ball. But that's kind of my typical role. So I love technology.
Oh, that's fun. So I take it you were the person that did all the gadgets in any of the puzzle hunts that you run. Do you have a background in, well, either programming or engineering or whatever?
Yeah, I'm a programmer.
Stalkingly enough, I was looking up, I just Googled Dan Egner before this and found your resume. So that was fun.
Wow, you just read his resume for fun.
It was the first result in Google.
Just like, oh, first result is his resume. I'm going to go read it.
Yeah. Must be ancient. I don't know when I've last updated that.
Yeah.
This is where he went to school. These are his jobs. Yeah. What you should have done is you should have just said, so I remember back in 1983 you did this. That would have been more fun, because then you would have creeped them out.
Just creeped them out. I'm not that creepy.
That was
an
opportunity.
I'm sorry. sorry for not creeping out our guests.
I think it's fun. I think Dan can take that.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Probably.
I met Dan when I went down to California. It was really cool because for some reason I thought that Dan and Weiwa and Trish and everybody there were in L.A. I don't know why I thought that, but I just thought you were.
What everybody assumes in California.
Probably. Yeah. And I was going to the one up north, San Francisco. So, but Dan got a hold of me, and which was great, so I got a chance to meet him and everybody. We played games. We didn't get a chance to do an escape room, but it was fun to hang out. And we ate food. It was all sorts of fun. And so hopefully Dan can come up here, and then we could show you around Toronto.
I would love to.
Well, are you planning on ever making a trip up here?
I would very much love to. No immediate plans. It's on my want-to-do list.
Yes, because it'll be great.
So you design, or you help design Puzzle Hunts now. Like, when did you go from being an enthusiast to being like, I got to do this on my own, too?
Well, I think most enthusiasts... Well, so in the Puzzle Hunt community... There's sort of the expectation. These things are all run like by enthusiasts, essentially. And in some of the hunts, like the Microsoft game, the rule was if you won, you had to put on the next one.
Oh.
The MIT hunt is like that, too.
Yes, the MIT hunt is to this day like that. And it's kind of a double-edged sword because it means that since running it's a lot of work, a lot of teams will sort of try to be second. But, of course, you don't want to sort of visibly throw the game because that's kind of awkward. So you just kind of slow down when you think, and then there's another team. Oh, another team won. Great. Full speed ahead. So, and in reality, I don't know any escape enthusiast who has not done a room or has not daydreamed about the rooms they would start.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You know, or the themes they would like to see or how they would do it or something like that. And puzzle hunts are the same. Like from the time you first do something like the, you know, a van game or whatever, especially if you didn't like it, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe some parts of it were really fun, but there were just some awful flaws or it was kind of just amateur-y. Yeah. You think I could do better. So then you're sort of dreaming of it. And if there's this thing where it's like, well, the winning team gets to put on the next one, then you're like, all right, we got to win because I really want to like make my mark and do this. In this community now, it's more like whoever wants to can put it on. So I think kind of from the first hunt, you're daydreaming. And then after that, at some point, you're like, hey, let's do this. And since you're young and naive and don't realize how much work actually goes into putting on an event, which you probably have some familiarity with, then you say, sure, let's do it. How hard can it be? Weekend or two, you know, write down some puzzles, call it good.
Ruby had an idea.
No, I think we have run enough events to know how much work it would be.
Yeah, but that first one, you're right. It's like, yeah, sure, let's just do it. And then...
I think, for me, I didn't expect our puzzle hunt to be as busy as it was because I didn't expect anybody to find it.
No, and neither of us expected the leaderboard to people to pay so much attention to it.
Yeah, people like that leaderboard.
Because if I made a mistake, they would be on it immediately. Like,
how did you announce that?
We're numbers.
How did I even find it?
I have no idea. I have no idea how anybody found that. I just don't know. Just somebody found it and then people just started posting it places. I mean, sometimes I'd search for it and then I'd find some random forum about, I don't know, kitten grooming. I have no idea, but they'd have a little forum random part that says, hey, this is a puzzle hunt I'm doing. Who can help me? It'd be weird. I'd find it in the weirdest places.
Do you groom kittens?
No, I don't know. Ruby would know. She's a cat poster, so yes.
How do you get them to sit still?
You don't.
I think Ruby's cat's just lazy. No, I'm kidding. I don't know about your cat.
No, they're vicious.
They're vicious? They're
vicious. Yeah, he doesn't like to be groomed. He feels like you're taking away his fur.
And then he tries to eat it.
Yes. He'll, like, grab it back.
Anyway, sorry, we don't have to talk about cat grooming.
But yeah, That was when Errol discovered the Puzzle Hunt community at any rate, just or how big it could be and how, yeah, it's like if people caught wind of a Puzzle Hunt, suddenly they just descended on it and...
Yeah, the people were just happy for a free Puzzle Hunt, it seemed, and so they all joined it.
Well, yours happened to be pretty good.
Thank you. Yay. It was fun, but it was very stressful for us. Stressful in running it because I stupidly started it at 6 a.m. and I shouldn't have done that because that meant I should have got. I had to get up sometimes at 6, or if I slept in, it's like, oh no, I slept in.
It was a very convenient time for us.
Dan, for anybody that didn't know, although I did say it, he lives in California, so you're 3 hours behind from where we are. So yes, that would have been just your 9. Or no, sorry, that would have been your 3 a.m.
So you guys just stayed up till...
Is that true?
Yeah.
So it was an inconvenient time for you guys.
You know what? I remember this now because I remember Waywall would stay up because he's a pretty late owl. He would stay up and do that, yeah.
And then, you know, it would just be his nightly afterthought before he went to bed, if I remember.
Special team own a game, or however you pronounce it.
I am curious. I mean, you guys are pro puzzlers in that, but were there any of the puzzles that you wanted to murder Errol over? Because we had a few people who were ready to murder Errol.
Yep.
No, they were all good.
Yes!
I don't remember any murder moments.
Well, I think it's because you guys are used to puzzles. You probably are used to just... Well, I don't know how long it took you guys. Burninators were fine. Your guys were near the top. So you probably just burned through the puzzles. But I think people who are new to puzzles, because the difference between puzzle difficulty from what you're normally used to is vast between that and a Puzzle Hunt puzzle. My first introduction to Puzzle Hunts was Puzzle Donkey. And when I first started doing those, I was going, what on earth is happening here? This is crazy. I don't even know. It blew my mind how hard these puzzles were, but it fascinated me at the same time. And that's when I was first driven to make puzzles like that. That was like years ago. Did I just scare you, Mike? Or why are you looking at me like that?
No, I just remember beta testing your puzzles, and I'm not a puzzler. So, yeah, I remember being very frustrated. It was the equivalent of having the game master in the room with you, handing you out clues as you're doing stuff because he knew you were stuck.
Well, so you didn't have any hints. You would start posting them maybe like after a day or something like that.
We'd post them after a day. We also had people could email as well after a day. So
yeah,
right. Because often you would say well, it depends on the hunt. But it's hard to do in an online hunt. It's hard to do fairly.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, our standards for puzzle murder are a little different. Like yours, I mean, first of all, they had been tested and they were fairly, saying straightforward sounds wrong, but each puzzle had a thing and you had to figure out that thing and do it. It wasn't like 7 unrelated layers of guess what I'm thinking on top of each other. And you really don't know puzzle murder until you've played an Australian puzzle hunt.
Really? Describe this to me.
I do not mean to in any way besmirch the reputation of Australians around the world, but they have their own unique style in many things, and puzzle hunts are one of the ways they have their own unique style. And so there's a community there of puzzle hunts. Usually they're centered around a university. So the Melbourne University has one. Sydney University has one. Those are Mums and Sums, respectively. And there's some others. And they have a sort of standard format they use, which is not too different from sort of imagine Errol's hunt kind of multiplied out a bunch in terms of how puzzles are released. So they'll release a wave. It'll usually last a week. They'll release a wave of puzzles instead of one puzzle on any given day. And then the next day they will do two things. One is they'll release the second wave of puzzles, and they'll also release hints for each of the puzzles in the first wave. Just like a little cryptic teaser hint, so not like a personalized hint, but like a one sentence thing. And then on the third day, they'll release the third wave of puzzles and a second hint for the, and a first hint for the second day's puzzles and a second hint for the first day's puzzles and so on. And then after a week, you've had 7 waves of puzzles. And then after 2 weeks, you've had 7 hints for all the puzzles. And that's when they kind of consider it all closed. And the puzzles are, and again, I do not mean to besmirch the fine country of Australia where I've had many good times, the worst thing ever. They're fun enough that many of us will do them, and they're often very inventive, but they have a strong streak of guess what I'm thinking. And this is on top of the totally fair and understood, there's some just cultural difference. You do a puzzle across cultures and something that everyone in Australia immediately recognizes, and we don't because we're not familiar with whatever. Is fine. Like, sure, if I'm going to do an Australian hunt, I've got to expect that. But there's also some things where it's just like, okay, it's either guess what I'm thinking or it's just a really specific piece of information. And, you know, like a very simple example that's actually not particularly murdersome is, you know, you just have this page with a bunch of lines on it. And you and a bunch of other stuff too, but it turns out the first thing you do is, what are these lines? Well, those lines are actually the routes on a very specific ski slope in Australia. If you happen to go to if you happen to be a skier and go to that ski slope and be familiar with its route map, you might pick that up. Otherwise, eh. Now, somewhere around hint 2 or 3, when it's like the hints are starting to use words like, you know, are you snowed in by this puzzle? And, you know, finding this one a little slippery, are you? Then you might start thinking, like, does this have something to do with snow or what? Or, oh, maybe is this a ski slope? Let me Google all the Australian ski slopes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's pretty, that was actually pretty reasonable by comparison, because that's just a piece of Australian trivia. But they do have their style, and I've known people who have angrily sworn off any Australian puzzle hunt ever.
I do remember, if anybody reads through the hints and tips of doing the MIT mystery hunt, one of their tips is just get as many people as you can on your team, because somebody might know this very obscure piece of trivia.
Yep. I mean, and for that one person, it's like, oh my God, this like little known children, you know, young adult series that only I ever read growing up. And there's a puzzle all about it. And you wouldn't even know that it was about this unless you were a deep fan of it, because it only mentions the names of the familiars in this thing, which I happen to memorize because I'm the biggest nerd of this series ever.
And then suddenly you are a god.
For an hour.
And then they forget you and toss you like the refuse you are. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, going back to escape rooms, mystery rooms was, or sorry, Scrap was your first room. Was it mystery room? Mysterious room or?
Mysterious room.
Nice. And so tell me how you first got introduced to the escape room world.
You know, I forget how we even learned about it. Somebody saw a posting or something. They had some poster somewhere and people were like, what is this? And somebody forwarded it to some list or something like that. And we were all like, I don't know what this is. Sounds kind of wacky. Puzzly. Let's try it. So we all went and tried it. Well, not all of us, many of us. So, you know, Scrap, as you know, has like a fairly large player count. So we got a bunch of people. But I think when I played Mysterious Room, we were six people. And so there were 5 strangers in the room with us. 2 of whom happened to be Scrap enthusiasts who had played Scrap games in Japan. So that was, you know, very, very helpful because they at least had some basis in this thing. Whereas this was the first room escape in North America, so nobody else there had any idea what any of this was or what even you were supposed to be doing. And so we go into this mysterious room and we start like, there's some clothes hanging on the wall, blah, blah, blah. This room is still running, so I won't spoil any of the puzzles, but the most enthusiasts have probably either done it or decided not to do it by now. You know, they had some tips and tricks. They were named Panda and Penguin. They had little Panda and Penguin hats.
Oh, my God.
So that was very helpful. And, yeah, we escaped, which was, in retrospect, kind of remarkable. Nice. Though we did essentially brute a lock, which Scrap will no longer let you do.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, and they allowed it? Oh.
They did then. We knew the type. We had some restrictions. We sort of knew the type of thing you were looking for. If you've done this room, it's the final thing, basically. Yeah. So you know we're looking for something, and you know, furthermore, that brooding will get you to the answer pretty darn quick. But yeah, they would not. A later team to have done it said that, yes, we started doing the same thing, and they immediately forbade us from doing that.
And then from then on, you just started doing more and more rooms?
Well, of course, doesn't everybody?
I mean, well, if it was the very first one, what was the second one, and who followed suit?
I was trying to remember that myself. Like, what was the second room I did? Now, Scrap at some point opened the time travel room, of course. But I think the next rooms I did was, we actually didn't do any for a few months, but we noticed, like, hey, there's these other companies opening them up. And then I organized an escape room crawl, and I said, all right, who's with me? We're going to do all the escape rooms, all of them in our area. In one day.
Oh, awesome. Wow.
Now, now this is inconceivable, right? Yeah. But at the time, we had all done Mysterious Room. Most of us hadn't done any of the others. So that left six rooms. And so we went and did the other six in one day, which, you know, six in a day is totally doable. That included one room from this company called Kuma, one of Nate Martin's rooms, which at the time was open in San Francisco, which is the Grim Escape, and Escape from the Room with a Zombie, which was already spreading widely by that point, as I suppose zombie infestations do, and three rooms from Home Escape, which had just opened in the air. And so then after doing all those and being like, wow, each of these was different, but cool in its own way. And people are really taking this very different inventive approach to each of these rooms. You know, I was sort of bracing myself for like, oh, is it going to be lots and lots of kind of the same old, you know, reshuffling of the same tricks. But no, they were all like different. And some of them I didn't like, but at least I didn't like them in unique ways. Now, of course, now I've met plenty of rooms that are, in fact, reusing the same old. But at the time, it was like, wow, this is a really cool trend. I'm going to, you know, play a bunch more of this.
Yeah, because Home Escape is another franchise, so they would have been a little bit different, probably, maybe.
Yeah, and then, smaller team sizes, a lot more technology.
Yeah, and Escape from the Room, Zombie 1. Who started that? Because that's...
The Bucket List guys.
Yeah.
I forgot their other name.
Room Escape Adventures, I think, is their DBA.
Yeah. That's right.
And now they have Still Hungry and maybe even a third.
Right. Oh, they do?
Yeah.
So they are expanding?
Yeah.
Because Escape from the Room of a... Sorry, Trapped in a Room with a Zombie is not that popular here.
Yeah, because, well, I guess the quality on the one here wasn't as...
Have you done anywhere else? Because...
Well, yeah, no. Well, the reviews from other people.
So people in London very much like it. Most of the enthusiasts there I've met have been like, oh, you know, actually it's really unique and it's not for everyone, but it's really cool and everyone should try it. Whereas we all, upon doing the one here, like, we hated it. We were all just like, that is the worst room ever. Yeah. Definitely not doing their sequel, which is like, I'll do many bad rooms.
Yeah, we will too.
But that was like, you know, everyone was like, oh, that was just a horrible experience. And it sounds like people there might be more in between those polar extremes. It's a very polarizing thing.
Same sort of thing with the live events of Scrap.
Scrap.
Yes. Yeah. So I think we probably would, if Trapped in a Room with a Zombie did another one, we might do its sequel just to see maybe they would have improved. That's our hope, is that they will improve it by the next one.
Actually, they were supposed to bring it last year, but I don't know the status of it now.
I'm not sure how they would explain another zombie. It's like,
okay, guys, this time it's totally gonna work.
I forgot to ask you this when we were talking about you designing the puzzle hunts. How long does it take you to design Bang, or your team to design Bang?
You know, probably a few months ago now. Let's see, this is July. It was probably March-ish that we started meeting regularly.
Nice.
So we'd start meeting like once every week or two at that point. And then in the last couple months, probably it was like May when we started sort of meeting every week and really like going at it kind of in earnest. But of course, it's all nights and weekends. So how do you, you know, which is the same way with your Canadian caper games, right?
Yeah.
How many people help design puzzles?
So on the core team, there were six of us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us put in, well, I mean, it's all collaborative. Like, there's somebody comes up with the core idea, and then somebody else, like, revises it a whole lot, and then some other people have input. So it's hard to say, like, how many people invented which puzzles, but we all put substantial effort into all of them.
Nice. So, like, do you mean, like, the core is made up of five people, six people, 12?
Yeah, five or six.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. And I take it you all, do you usually work with the same people?
Yeah, at least for these events. Not always. I mean, I don't. But we are the Burninators, which name, you know, is both because, you know, we like Trogdor and because we argue with each other a lot. And we do have this tradition of running every seventh Bang, so we kind of come together for that.
Nice.
But I've helped with the puzzle events done by a variety of other people as well.
Yeah, how many puzzle hunts are there in your area?
Well, if we go to Puzzle Hunt Calendar.
That was third in the Google search, by the way.
So what is puzzlehuntcalendar.com? Is that basically what it is?
Yeah, there's a lot less than there used to be. I think actually this scene is kind of dwindling.
Yeah.
And I would blame escape rooms, except it was kind of dwindling even when escape rooms started getting big. Mm-hmm. This summer is actually better than usual. So we have Bang 35. We have Late Night Snack, which is a Ghost Patrol bang. We have the Berkeley Mystery Hunt, which is kind of modeled after the MIT Mystery Hunt. We have the Great Puzzle Adventure, The Will, which is a puzzle event from a total new BGC, which will be very exciting. And the usual sort of schedule of puzzle pints and so on. But it used to be like, I remember a summer in like early 2010s, maybe even 2009 or something, when it seemed like there was a major weekend-long puzzle event like every other weekend.
And do they all have... Is it the pride of finishing, or their prizes, or how does it all work? Like, is there anything like that?
It's all been the pride of finishing. I mean, the MIT Hunt and the old Microsoft game had you get to run the next one if you win. Mm-hmm. Get to slash have to. The ones that are in our community now are all just... You get to see your name on the leaderboard in the number one spot.
Nice.
I guess this is a hard question to ask because nobody could really answer it, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. Have you had any favorite escape rooms so far? I know you mentioned Alm Escape.
My top escape room right now would probably be Time Run, which is in London, UK. After that, my favorite local escape room here is probably the Great Houdini Escape Room in San Francisco. I don't think either of those choices will be very controversial among their local communities. I like to say, and this, like, Errol, you know, is working on these top five lists. It's like most enthusiasts I agree on, maybe not the top room, but the best few in an area. And most people can agree on the ones that you should never go to.
Yes.
In between, you'll have lots of controversy because of different people liking different things or having different experiences. But yeah, those would be kind of my favorites. And both of them, I think, would actually meet those characteristics I said earlier, where there's kind of magic technology, but which actually works, which is important. There's also, to varying degrees, kind of interesting insights. You're not just like, oh, hey, push this button, open this door kind of thing. There's kind of an experience going on.
Now, nobody knows out there in the rest of the world, other than the few that I've shared it with in the Slack enthusiast chat. In fact, I only invited a few people to that private channel, but I was trying to get a spreadsheet of the top five rooms in every city, because what everybody always asks when they're visiting a city is, which room should I do? And it will be a list only for enthusiasts, because you might share that with newbies. But sometimes there are some rooms that I don't think would be great for newbies to go to, because it might not be best for their situation. And so if you're visiting a city, you might only be one or two people. You probably can't travel as easily because you might be bound by distance or the airport or whatever. And you would have been an enthusiast. So you probably want to do something that you've never seen before. And so that's why I wanted to do that list. Except, you know, it's just sitting there right now.
I wasn't sure if I should out it, but I figured you could always delete the segment if you didn't.
Ah, you can out it. Who's listening anyway? We can start slamming on reviewers and owners, too, while we're at it and see where that goes. No, I'm kidding.
So, speaking of escape room lists and whatnot, so you started the directory.
Yes.
It's called escaperoomdirectory.com.
Yes.
Huzzah.
How far reaching is it? Do you try and gather everything from the world, or is it more for your local area?
It is worldwide.
This is a question for somebody who actually hasn't been on the directory,
yeah.
Have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, okay.
And if you start at the top, so right now there are 75 countries. At this point, the directory's data quality is not that great, I have to say, because for the last couple of years, I've mostly just been keeping up with submitter submissions. Every now and then I'll do a little bit of curiosity or when I go visit a city, I'll go clean that city up. But I keep it up because some people like the format. And yeah, it is definitely worldwide. And I was excited recently to see, you know, I'm always excited to see a new country that didn't have an escape room before get one. And I'm always more excited when it seems to be like a truly local, like not just like, oh, Escape Hunt opened a franchise in, you know, wherever, Dubai or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like recently a couple of rooms opened in Iran. And that was, you know, and they appeared to be truly local rooms with kind of a very local flavor to them. And I sort of read through their sites in Google Translate because I don't speak Farsi, of course. But, you know, and that sort of thing is always interesting to me to see, like, how it how people take this concept and use it within their sort of cultural matrix.
So we actually haven't probably talked about the main escape room meccas around the world, because I think we all just kind of assume that knowledge. However, you would probably know, having an escape room directory and searching this out.
I don't know. I would like to know. I always consider Toronto one.
We have a lot of them, yes.
L.A. is kind of one within the United States. Mm-hmm. New York to a second extent. East Asia, boy, I just don't even, like, know where to begin. Like, you know, last I looked on, like, various Chinese directories struggling through the translations, there was several hundred in each of the major Chinese cities.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness.
But that's not really a mecca, because it's not like I can go play those games.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hungary, obviously. You know, the UK to some degree. But I'm sure, I am just sure that there are places where there are tons of amazing games that we kind of haven't discovered.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be kind of fun.
It's like the lost city of Atlantis of escape rooms kind of thing.
Well, I was so intrigued when this one guy on Facebook, because this topic comes up on Facebook often enough, which is like, what are the best cities to visit? And everyone's like, I live in this city and we have great escape rooms. And it's like, well, you know, and this one guy was saying like, you know, Istanbul is the best. And I've been to like lots and lots of countries. And I was like, oh, really? That's interesting. Do we have anything in common so that I can know where you're even coming from? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find anything in common. So I have no idea. Istanbul may or may not have awesome escape rooms. And that's one reason why I was so interested in, for example, Edwin's and soon Ken's trip to Hungary, yes. Which you talked about in your last episode.
Yes. And I know that David also went to Australia. Have you been to Australia for escape rooms? I can't remember if you have or not.
I have not. I've been to Australia, but that was before escape rooms.
Okay. So I like that aspect because David would have the comparison between Australia and the U.S. and now Canada. And actually, no, he hasn't been to the U.K. yet.
So yeah, that's always the tricky thing is finding those points of comparison.
Now, Edwin being the enthusiast, I know he likes going around through all of them. And I did find it very interesting. The one question I asked him, there are a lot of differences, but he found the difficulty level pretty much the same across all the ones that he's done.
I mean, there's sometimes local cultural knowledge you need to have, which will make it harder if you're from outside.
Yes.
The chains probably normalize things a little bit. You know, the scraps and Ohm escapes and hint hunts of the world kind of going around and deploying what they do. It probably sort of sets some expectations.
Is there a puzzle hunt that you really want to do?
There are several puzzle hunts I really want to do. I love long form, truly long form puzzle hunts. Probably my favorite puzzle hunt of all time, even though the puzzles were definitely not my favorite of all time, was called the Great America Race, mm-hmm. which was, at least in many of its incarnations, 7 days. And each day would take you from one city to another city. Wow. So they would tell you in advance, like, oh, this is the route. And so you could book hotel rooms in all of these cities. And it would be from, you know, D.C. to Chicago or something. And so each day you would solve a bunch of puzzles in that city and then drive to the next city and solve a bunch of puzzles there and then eventually finish and then go, like, have a little end party and check into your hotel and then wake up the next morning and do this again. And I loved – this is me being weird – but I loved this sense halfway through. It's like, it's a Thursday, and the muggles around you are having their Thursdays. And you're like, yeah, I can't even remember when I wasn't just solving puzzles all day. Like, my long-term memory is gone, and it's just, I am living Puzzleverse. And you know what? I'm going to be doing this for 3 more days. I can't even look forward to, like, I just can't visualize a world without just all puzzles all the time. And that is actually an incredibly delightful feeling if you enjoy puzzles. If not, it's probably kind of awful. And I would like to capture that sense. I don't love the overnight games where you're not sleeping because that just kind of is unhappy and unhappy.
Comes an endurance test at that point.
Right. Now, I mean, if you're like in your 20s, you know, maybe it's all fun, but I'm not. And so I would love, for example, a dream puzzle hunt would be like traveling across Europe by train, doing puzzles in each of several cities and maybe on the train or something like that. And each day would be like a little bit of a different theme and have a different like thing and maybe different authors or something like that. That would be the dream. But logistically, of course, that's non-trivial.
Well, if you ever make that and you need a Puzzle Hunt designer to help you with one of the authors for, you know, and you, then you want to fly someone to anywhere, Europe, I can find someone for you.
Funnily enough, that's one of my ideal escape room.
Is funnily a word?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes! Stop questioning me! Anyway, no, that's one of my ideal escape room scenarios, is having an escape room, like, yeah, train trip or something.
Presumably longer than an hour.
Oh yeah, of course.
For the launch of Virgin America, they had a Puzzle Hunt, the airline. They had a Puzzle Hunt, and it was conducted entirely in flight.
Oh, wow.
And they were publicizing their launch of their airline and also the fact that they had onboard Wi-Fi, which was new and exciting at the time. Mm-hmm. And so they had all these sort of puzzle luminaries, like getting on board this special flight from, like, I forget where to where. And then I think it didn't even go anywhere. I think it, like, flew around and then, like, landed again. It was kind of a super weird thing.
So who are the puzzle luminaries?
Well, not me. I did not get invited. But Weiwa.
Yeah, well, yes. So Weiwa. I mean, I don't know if very many people in the escape world know who the puzzle luminaries are, for that matter, right? Because it's kind of a separate thing. You find because it's been more open to the mainstreams, and then they want to create escape rooms, and so they go ahead and do it. Because, and for some are really good at creating puzzles, and some aren't, but they have no idea that there's a whole slew of people in a field of puzzle design that they could pull upon.
Well, I don't even know who the escape room luminaries would be. I guess I could name a few people that are kind of famous.
Well, I think escape room luminaries are different because it's only been around for like, well, in North America, it's only been around for what, 4 years?
That's long enough to have luminaries.
Yeah, but there might be more in Asia because they've been around for how long? I'm looking at you, Mike. Now, not because you look Asian. I just figured you'd know.
We'll just say longer.
Longer.
There are a lot of, you know, designers in the puzzle community that are very well known and have their own styles. Do you know, I don't pay attention to this part of it, but do you know of any, like, designers in escape rooms that are coming to the forefront? Or it's like you go into an escape room and it's like, yes, this was clearly designed by so-and-so.
Well, that's the thing is, escape rooms aren't really credited at the moment.
Yeah.
It's all the company. And so you could totally say Scrap has a very specific style. Yeah. Omascape has a very specific style. Hint Hunt, you know, these big franchises each have their very specific style. And the local rooms, too, you could say, you know, I can't name the ones in your area, but you definitely know that they have their style. But you don't know, unless you happen to know the owners, you don't really know who did it. And so there isn't this sense of authorship there.
And there is in Puzzle Hunts.
Somewhat, but it's more because it's a community, and so people do kind of know the owners, as it were. But people who know who Dan Katz is and the types of puzzles he makes or something like that. Or that people know who, you know, various puzzle authors are. So before we're totally out of time, I have a couple impertinent questions for you guys.
Ooh, impert away!
So, Errol is an unusual name. Name you after Errol Flynn, or is it more common in that area?
Nope. Maybe. I don't know what they didn't actually tell me what they named me after. It could have been Errol Flynn. Maybe they were just looking. Now, for the record, Errol isn't my first name. Errol's my second name.
Ooh.
Oh, you didn't know that either?
No. Wait,
oh.
What?
Blown away.
Wait till you find out what the first name is.
You see, I think my dad wanted to have three E's, right? So, like, when I named my daughter Zoe, her name is Zoe Olivia Elmer, and I wanted her initials to be her name. So I went and found an O name for her middle name, and that's how she got her name, Zoe. So I'm thinking for my dad, I mean, this is just me extrapolating just from me, because he and I are similar. In fact, we like to troll our children. So I think when he named me, he was looking for three E's, because I have three E's in my name. And so my first name, Errol, is my middle name. My last name, I pronounce it Elmer, only just so that it can rhyme with my first name, which is Elmer. Oh. So going around saying first your name is Elmer.
Elmer. Elmer.
It's Christmas for Mike right now.
I don't know what I'm going to do with this now.
Hang on, I got to go home and brainstorm.
Sorry, Dad.
Wow, I had no idea.
And going through public school as Elmer Elmer was very confusing to people. So by junior high, I switched it to Errol. I just went by my middle name. So it's still my name. It's my middle name. But it was easier for people.
And I have a similar question for Amanda.
Oh.
Why Manpan?
When I first met Errol, like, I'm actually Amanda. And wow. In high school, I dropped the A off because it was the only way to make Amanda somewhat unique without making it Mandy, because I hate Mandy.
Or Mindy.
Oh, God. That doesn't even... Anyway. but when I first met Errol, he was like, does anyone ever call you Manda Panda?
And I assume lots of people do.
And nope, no one's ever called me that. Like, maybe one person in the past, but no, so he's like, Manda Panda! And then it just sort of started going to, like, man pants. Because it was like, it just shortened from there, and so...
Too many syllables, man.
Too many syllables, so it was man. So, the one thing you should know about Errol is that when he gives somebody a nickname, it tends to stick and tends to overshadow their actual name. So, I always know when I've met somebody, because if I've met them before or after Errol. If I met them before Errol, I'm still Manda. If I met them after Errol... It's usually like, they're like, man pants, and then they'll correct and say Manda. And then, but even people who I met before Errol now are starting to sneak man pants in there, including my own mother.
It's B-E and A-E eras of life.
Yes, but I yes. like it. She actually refers to it B-A-E, before Errol, yeah, or B-E. Yeah.
B-E, before Errol. So this is like, you know, in 2-B-E, you know.
But you like, sorry, you're...
But I actually like the nickname, so I didn't really fight it that much. Plus, it when I'm signing up for online accounts and stuff, that username is never taken, ever. So it's always just easy to go by Manpants, because it's like, every other thing is variation of Manda's taken.
I think it's also really funny, because I don't think my mom knows her real name, and she thinks her real name is Manpants. So hearing my mother in her accent just call her, where is the Manpants? it's funny.
Do you ever use the brand of cookware?
Is there a man pan?
Man pans cookware.
Oh, really?
I noticed this at some point.
I'll have to buy it and then hold it up and then take a selfie.
I'm still blown away about Elmer.
As am I.
I think by episode 13 I'll have something clever to say. But for now, I'm just shocked.
Final question, and I ask this of all the guests now. If money were no object and you could have any escape room theme you haven't seen yet, what would it be?
Well, I mentioned this in the Slack, but I would want the 8-hour immersive escape room.
That would be cool.
That would be fun.
Any particular theme in general, or just like you just want it to be 8 hours and you want it to be super immersive?
I want it to be 8 hours and I want it to be super good. I'll let the designer pick the theme.
Oh, yeah. So as long as it was just an immersive 8-hour experience of amazingness, he'd be happy.
Awesome. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, I think this is also why what separates enthusiasts, too, from the mainstream. I don't know if I were to take some of my family to an 8-hour puzzle hunt, they'd kill me. I'd be on the couch for a long, long time. But I think it'd be awesome, a weekend. Could you imagine a whole immersive weekend?
Oh, that sounds awesome.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, for joining us. You don't have to hang up right away, because, you know, we could talk about other things like drama, but we can officially end this right now.
How am I going to edit that?
You don't have to edit that. People are just going to be now left
curious,
wanting,
they're
gonna knowing.
Want to hear this drama episode now.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now comes the part where Manda doesn't advertise Squarespace, but other things.
Yes.
Keep seeing, you know, I think we should get on the Squarespace bandwagon.
I know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, so I've heard a lot of Squarespace ads.
And now we're talking about it now, and we're not even getting paid.
You know, we should sign up for Squarespace, because it sounds super awesome. Squarespace, sponsor us! Okay.
Let's keep it clean.
Room Escape Divas is brought to you by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com
Take two.
For those who didn't hear, Errol's whispering in my ear about his butt. Okay. RuneScape Divas and Giggling Errol is brought to you by InverseGenius.com. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find lots of other fun, geeky podcasts like this one. You can also find us on... Hang on.
They all end like this?
Yeah. Hang on. If you'd like to give Errol any more ideas about how to make me crack on the microphone, you can also email us at roomescapedivas@gmail.com. You can give him ideas, but trust me, he has many. He's wiggling his feet in my face right now. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.